Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for sharing your Sunday afternoon or evening, wherever you are, whichever coast you're on. I always appreciate you listening to me and taking the time to do that. Hey, at any rate, listen, today we're going to be talking about some things. I want to talk about targeted violence. I'll get into some detail on that a little bit later. And then we're also going to be talking about virtual terrorism. Are you ready for that one? Yeah, that has to do with our infrastructure. I'll explain that to you. And then I had gotten some emails that I haven't done anything from an historical perspective in a while. And again, there's been so many different things happening that sometimes the show is dictated by some of the most current events and things of that nature. So I am going to look at something that I want to bring to your attention. It's going to be one of those ooh and ah type of moments, you know, things that we forget about. So we'll get to that in a moment. But as always, is what I'd like to do is start out with talking about the emails that I received and read those to you. At least I keep it down to three because it would be too much to read. We get a lot of different emails, and for those of you that send me things and I don't respond to them on the air, I have to be careful about what it is and kind of stay focused with some of the things. Some of the emails I get have to do with the, from the political scheme of things. And I really do try to stay away from the politics of things, as you know. So I'm trying to stay focused, just on the issues that, as everyday people, no matter what, side of the aisle you're on, so to speak, I think safety really does have to do with all of us. And I do, my different public speaking, but anyway, we'll get into that. Okay, first email. Jim, is it my imagination or does it seem like Florida keeps having problems with the active shooters, but this time a guy stabbed five people? Stabbings usually don't get this much attention. Your thoughts on people stabbing versus guns? Peter from Omaha, Nebraska. Well, let's just talk about that for a moment because as I recall, I think I mentioned last week about the stabbing situation. But because I got some other emails about it, I kind of doing a small follow-up on it in terms of to be able to answer this question. Because what happened was, for those of you that weren't aware of that, that was a workplace attack. And as it turns out, that individual's name was Antoine Brown. He apparently went to work. He had an issue. He learned that his supervisors were firing him. And I guess according to the records, he's been accused of five counts of attempted murder and one of aggravated assault because of the fact that he stabbed these co-workers with a common pocket knife. Now, pocket knives can be deadly as well. We'll talk about that in a little bit, too. But anyway, he became aware of his potential termination and confronted management is what happened. He walked outside, called his pastor, and then went back inside and began attacking people. When the suspect returned, and began attacking these people, and the reason why I took up this particular email was a point that I wanted to make to the listeners, which is what same point that I have made to people who I speak to when I'm doing my seminars and things of that nature, and that is that when he came back and started attacking people, other coworkers fended him off with sticks and whatever they could grab. Now, see, this is what I'm talking about. This is the point that I'm making. Now, this guy had a lengthy arrest record, mostly for drug offenses dating back to when he was a teenager. And things like resisting arrest, trespassing, grand theft, domestic battery. And that charge was actually later dropped. But this is what I'm telling people, that, look, you get in a situation like this and you get an active shooter, you got something going on from this standpoint, you got to understand, you got to fight back. These people were using sticks or whatever they could. And they tried to subdue him and hold him for the police, but he actually ended up getting away. So when you get in these environments where there's an active shooter or even something like this, hey, pick up something, throw something, do whatever you have to do to preserve your life and to protect yourself from injury. Now, let me just tell you, this business about stabbings, this is serious business. Knives are actually more lethal, believe it or not, in certain respects, than guns. I'm not talking about the ARs, by the way. I'm just talking about regular handguns. You know, regular handguns, a bullet, you know, can go in you or whatever. Sometimes some of them tumble. But these knives, when somebody uses knives, those things are deadly from the standpoint where they penetrate and then they draw them out. Or there's a lot more blood from hitting, you know, stabbing an artery, you know, et cetera. But let me tell you something. Here's the deal. Stabbing attacks have become increasingly common from a terrorist attack on random civilians as well. Now, let me just tell you that the terrorist organizations, like Al-Qaeda for one, Al-Qaeda actually published an article that was entitled "O Knife Revolution Head Toward America." And the magazine that came out urged Muslims to kill the influential personalities and, you know, of America by low-tech methods, including stabbing attacks on the grounds of such assaults are easy options that do not require huge efforts or manpower, but the result is parallel to the big operations or even more. Then, on an online propaganda and recruitment magazine published by the Islamic State of Iraq, they told their followers that holy warriors down through Muslim history have struck the necks of the kuffar in the name of Allah with swords, severing limbs, and piercing the fleshy meat of those who oppose Islam. Now, that magazine also advises readers that knives are easy to obtain, easy to hide, and are deadly, and that they make good weapons in places where Muslims might be regarded with suspicions. So, is what I'm telling you, this business about these knives, even though this is a, you know, situation that took place in Florida, let me just tell you, the knives, like I said, can be very, very deadly. So, yeah, I mean, I look at these and say, you know, that the impact of them, what this guy did was very severe, obviously. So, stabbing versus guns, like I said, like I just read, stabbings, knives, easy to conceal. Now, when I do some of my trainings, I talk about the fact that they have people running into restaurants, you know, stabbing and slashing people, you know, sit by the front door. That's why I tell my listeners, and as well as people attending the seminars that I do and the trainings that I do, don't sit by the front doors at restaurants overseas or when you're here as well. Because as you can see from what I just told you, even the terrorist organizations are trying to encourage people to use those because they're easier to conceal, et cetera. Okay? All right. I hope that answers your question, Peter. Now, the next one, Jim. I've heard you speak at least on two occasions, and I listen to your show on a regular basis. I never hear you tell your listeners about your speaking. I think you should, LOL. Just a suggestion, Sabrina from Los Angeles. Yeah, I really don't do a lot of promoting myself on a show like that, but yes, it's true. I do a lot of speaking engagements. I did some speaking engagements this week, did one Saturday morning down in the Long Beach area to a nice group of friendly people, and going to actually be doing another one on Tuesday morning. My whole emphasis is trying to get the word out to people, and I'm doing it in front of groups, political associations, business associations. So if any of you want me to speak, you know, at your church, at your schools, at your business or whatever the case may be, I'm definitely available to do those things. I'm very passionate, as you know, about doing this, Sabrina. So, and I appreciate that. You've heard me speak a couple of times. Obviously you're not disappointed. So I'm glad to hear that. All right. Let's look at number three. Jim, do you think community policing will help secure our nation? The relationship between the community as well as the police department is really becoming very negative. It's not only negative, but there's also unwarranted accusations against law enforcement. It certainly does not help when some cops use bad judgment in the performance of their job. I think it will certainly help race relations. You know, what are your thoughts? Herbert, Englewood, California. Well, Herbert, first of all, let me explain. Well, there's two things here. The first one about helping race relations. I would always hope that race relations between law enforcement as well as the general community, I hope that is going to improve. I think part of the problem is that the media has a tendency to keep the worst parts of all of this in front of us. And I think that's what inflames people. Now, for those of you who do not know what community policing is now, I know somebody was on the show last year talking about how their particular community, so to speak, bands together to watch out for things. But for those of you who do not know exactly what that is, I thought it would be good to spend a moment with that. Community policing is a law enforcement strategy. And to be honest with you, that's been around since the early 80s. You know, most people in the public safety sector have likely heard this term before, but what does community policing really mean to the everyday average citizen? Well, let me just tell you, it's generally defined as law enforcement, a law enforcement philosophy, I should say, that allows the officers to continuously operate in the same area in order to create a stronger bond with the citizens living and working in that area. It gives, you know, the public a chance to interact with the law enforcement individuals and to engage with the local residents and prevent crime from happening instead of responding to incidents after they occur. And even though it says community policing, it's really like community relations. So a lot of the stations even have community relations officers who do engage the community. Now, you know, those are the things you don't hear about as much. Every once in a while, you can see on TV or the internet where they have police officers that are dancing with people and, you know, just doing different little antics with them. That's all part of that community relations, community policing type of mentality. Now, you have to look at that and say, well, look, how is that different from regular traditional policing? Well, look, it's really, community policing is really intended to prevent crime before it happens rather than just having to respond to that crime after it occurs. And it focuses on creating a safe social environment. And I think that's part of the negativity right now, Herbert, that you just mentioned. But, you know, that's not the way that it was intended to, it was intended to be. And like I said, you know, sometimes when these things happen, the media blows it up to the point where they get people's emotions going. And then that creates the negative impact as well. Now, the concept is really to engage residents to determine which criminal activities they are most affected by and creating an accurate law enforcement priority list shaped by the people who live in the area. I know that when I was on patrol, that was one of the things that we did. People would ask us to do house checks and, you know, patrol checks, we used to call them, to go around, especially like if they were out of town and, you know, things of that nature. Or they think there's something going on in the neighborhood. Can you do more patrol checks? Which just means us driving through the neighborhood. So you can request that, you know, and they do that as a matter of course. At least I know the L.A. County Sheriff's Department did. I'm sure most of the agencies do that as well. So they're called patrol checks. All right. Now, it also encourages, the concept is also supposed to encourage residents to participate with law enforcement in order to keep their own community safe. We had a caller last year that said that he, you know, in his neighborhood, that's what they did. Some people call it neighborhood watch. You know, that's the other thing, neighborhood watch, where people are watching out for each other. Now, let me just tell you something. When you really think about it in its simplest form, community policing, it does create a partnership between law enforcement and the residents. And the more involved law enforcement is with the residents that they are sworn to protect, the more residents can help law enforcement achieve their goal. Now, look, you know, you go to certain communities or certain people that want to say that police are out there to kill people. That is just not the kind. That is not true. I mean, I know it happens. I think police officers, as you said, Herbert, use poor judgment sometimes in the performance of their jobs. But look at how many law enforcement officers are actually out there. Well, you don't hear about this every day, but when you hear about it, it's blown up, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent. Now, there are benefits to an effective community policing structure. You know, residents have a more favorable view of their local police department when these things happen the right way, when they do interact, when the residents interact. Now, some people in the community don't want it. They don't want, some of them don't want it because certain neighborhoods are crime ridden, where the gangs, so the gangs don't want it, but of course the law abiding citizens, they do want it. So it's all about trying to improve the trust between law enforcement and the residents. So community policing, in my opinion, to answer your question, I think is extremely important. And the more accurate information from residents regarding criminal activity in their community would be very beneficial to the local law enforcement. But again, some people don't want to see them there. They feel that their interaction between the police department and everyday citizens can get somebody hurt. Well, look, I think we need a better understanding of the needs of the citizens and their expectations of the police as well. I think that's very important. I was at a meeting yesterday where an individual was running for a political office, and one of the things that he talked about was having an oversight of civilians with the police department, so that if something happens, it's not just being judged by police officers to determine whether or not the validity of the if there's any validity to the behavior of the police officer. So having an oversight committee of civilians that can review it as well would be important. But again, some places may have that, some may not. But once again, here's what's going to happen. Even if you have the oversight committee, and now that oversight committee determines that the police officers weren't at fault, then that's going to be problematic. So I think that we're in a, I don't want to say a no-win scenario, Herbert. I think that we can do it. But I think people need to keep their minds a little bit more open to this. If there's anybody that wants to call in to voice an opinion about it, you're always welcome to call in, as you guys know. The number is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Or, once again, you can email me, listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. And if you want to get my blog or email blast about upcoming show topics, all you have to do is text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and simply enter your email address. Again, that's text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address. And as what will happen is we'll put you on our email blast, so you'll get the shows for the upcoming topics. But again, I really do hope that the race relations get better. I'm not getting into the political piece of it because everybody's got their views about some of this, Herbert. But the reality is that if we let it work, community policing is a very good thing. It's been around a long time for a reason, because it does work. All we have to do is give it a chance to work and be open-minded when we hear these different events that happen, and let the system take care of the criminal aspects of it if a law enforcement officer, as an example, crossed that line. Okay? All right. It takes care of those emails. Now, let's talk about something else, because this has been a concern of mine. My wife and I sometimes talk about this business about our infrastructure and the way that, you know, these terrorist threats through the infrastructure could create a problem. I've casually mentioned it on some of the other shows, I'm sure, throughout the last year or so. But you got to understand that the threat of virtual terrorism against infrastructure is growing. It's growing. So first of all, let me explain what I mean by infrastructure. All right. And think about it this way. It's the kind of like the fundamental facilities and systems that serve our country or our city or, you know, other areas on a daily basis, as an example. And it has to do with public and private physical improvements, so like on roads, railways, bridges, tunnels, water supply, sewers, electrical grids, telecommunications, as an example, internet connections and broadband speeds, commodities, you know, things like that. As a matter of fact, if you think about that movie with Bruce Willis, Live Free, Die Hard, or something like that, I think it was called. Remember what happened in the movie, the way that the hackers were shutting everything down. They shut down the electricity. Everybody was all upset the way that they said it. See, that's an example about how we can be attacked. And when those kind of things happen, everybody gets in fear. The lights go out, people get in fear. It reminds me of a Twilight Zone episode. You know, for those of you that are old enough to remember the old black and white Twilight Zones, although I think they're still on TV, when the lights go out, everybody goes into a panic if they don't know why the lights went out and the whole lights in the whole city went out. But, you know, what's important about this business about the virtual terrorism is that these people are thinking, all right? That's what you have to understand. Terrorists are planning. It bothers us when we're sitting there watching the news And we hear these guys talking about our miles of railroads, you know, on the railways. I've mentioned this before, I know. But all of those kind of things, you got to understand, infrastructure is important. These guys are going to be doing things to that. They can hurt people that way. Now, part of what makes infrastructure generally vulnerable is also the cyber terrorism, all right, which I know we've talked about cyber terrorism before. But it's dependent upon software, and so many things that are out of our systems now are interconnected. See, that's the problem. Remember a few years ago when, as an example, there was a ship that was in the Caribbean, and the ship is using a computer system to steer it, you know, so I mean, it operates completely by this computer. And then something happened with the computer, and the ship ended up turning over. Well, look, that's where we are now. Everything we do now, all right, for all of these things, even the water systems, everything is geared up this way. So when we start talking about infrastructure and how somebody can attack it, they can do tremendous damage if they want to. They can even, it can even range from taking control of our water treatment facilities. It can shut down power generation plants. And that would cause havoc with the air traffic control system. Think about that. I mean, this is serious business. So, listen, the government is out there working on these things, to be perfectly honest with you. But this business about the virtual terrorism against our infrastructure, if they can't get us one way, they're going to try and get us another way. It's just that simple. Because they're not going to be able to get over here the same way. Now, we already know that we've had issues in the past with these different countries that have tried to interfere with us through the, you know, through electronics and things of that nature. Not to mention the hackers. I've already talked about hackers, so I'm not going to go into that. Hackers, some people may call a hacker a terrorist, okay? And that may be true, to be perfectly honest with you, because they do it for extortion as well. But just in general, all right, generally speaking, I'm talking about terrorist organizations that are thinking about this. Because they're here, and some of them are very, very smart when it comes to dealing with the electronics, you know, dealing with the Internet. That's how they're radicalizing people. So, you know, the FBI is jumping into this, obviously, that they should, and they've even jointly issued a report. As a matter of fact, that report is an urgent report that has stated that since May that these hackers, as an example, and we're talking about terrorist hackers, have been penetrating the computer networks of companies that operate. Are you ready for this? Nuclear power stations. You see what I'm talking about? Energy facilities, manufacturing plants, not only in the U.S., by the way, other countries as well. These guys are going to start doing a different type of terrorism. If they can't get boots on the ground, let's look at ISIS as an example. If ISIS can't get boots on the ground over here, which they cannot, okay, or Al-Qaeda cannot get boots on the ground over here, then what's next? Think about it. Because the airports are very controlled at this point. And so flying over is not going to work the same way. Those things are being checked and cross-checked. But think about it. They're going to have to open up a different type of warfare against us if we're not careful. And it just might be through the, you know, through hitting our infrastructure. I want to tell you, we got like 5,800 power plants in this country. That's going to be an ultimate soft target. People don't guard those things. You know, so I don't know. I know that they are looking into this and they are doing the safety precautions for some of those things. But the power sector, I'm going to tell you, it's already demonstrated itself to be particularly vulnerable. All right. And I know law enforcement is dedicating some resources to that, to closing back doors and training employees to avoid, you know, even clicking into the bad software and things when they're working there. Those are all factors. So this business about infrastructure, people, I'm just telling you, look, we've got enemies out there, and they are called terrorists. And I'm not just talking about domestic terrorists, all right? This more lends itself, in my opinion, to the international terrorists, although I would not put it past, because some of these really bad hackings have been done by hackers right here. And again, I think that's a form of domestic terrorism. But my concern is more towards somebody hacking into these places on our infrastructure. That, to me, is where we have to be extremely careful. But we'll just wait and see what happens. All right? Okay. Now, the next area I want to talk about has to do with this historical perspective. Look, we have a lot of discussions, quite frankly, on this business. And I told you last week, I'm not going to really be talking about the guns, but I think that people actually forget, okay, or they don't do their research on some of this to let you know where we are with all of this from an historical standpoint. Now, look, here's what, and somebody, actually a few people wrote in and asked about, you know, talking about some of the things that have happened in the past, because sometimes what happens in the past dictates what may happen in the future. And I get that. But look, let me just tell you something. I conduct these trainings. I conduct these seminars. I mean, I'm talking to, I don't know, 1,000 people a month or whatever through all this, all these different speaking engagements, et cetera, or trainings that we're doing. And people always talk about what's happening in the last few years. And, you know, everybody brings up about the gun situation as if our only focus with terrorism and bad terrorism has to do with these ARs, as an example. So I'm not going down the road on the ARs, right or wrong. I've really stated my opinions about those things. But people, stop and think about something. That's only one way, okay? That's only one way to have mass killings. So let's go back in time. First of all, I'll go back in time for something that's happened in the last, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 years, whatever. Let's talk about the Oklahoma bombing. What year was that? 1995. That's a bombing, people. All right, 1995, Oklahoma bombing. What about the bombing of the World Trade Center in the parking lot, the parking structure? That's bombing, all right? There's other types of situations like that as well. So you can't just look at this with a narrow focus. You eliminate one piece of this, they're going to turn to something else. There's no doubt about it. I remember when I was in terrorist school, I shouldn't call it terrorist school like I was a terrorist. I should call it anti-terrorism school, but at any rate, I remember they were showing us things. I mean, we were out there blowing stuff up and stuff. We were making bombs and how easy it was to be able to do that. I mean, I'm obviously not going to get into any of that, but don't forget, if you shut down one door, they're going to figure it out. Just like the individuals that flew into the World Trade Center in those airplanes and the Pentagon. Hey guys, guess what? Those weren't guns. Those were technically flying bombs because of the fuel. Think about it. Those were explosions. Those were explosions. So we cannot forget. See, when we let our guard down in one area, or we only focus on one area, that's when you get surprised with something else. See, that's the problem. So bombs have been a real serious killer in this country also. Explosions. All right? Now, I told you about things that are more recent with the Oklahoma bombing, and I told you, and I was with Timothy McVeigh, and then the Boston Marathon is another example. These are all bombings, folks. All right? So let's not lose the focus. So let's go back into the past a little bit. And I say a little bit. I'm going to take you back a ways back. Bombings. All right? 1905. Former Idaho governor Frank Stoutenberg, he was killed by a bomb in front of his home. And there was an assassin who accused him, and it had to do with the mines and things of that nature. And he was hired to assassinate this guy in retaliation for breaking up the miner strikes. But bombing, 1905. And let me just tell you something. I haven't gone back further than that, but it would take me, you know, 2 days to go through all of the bombings. So I decided to start with 1905. All right. I'll give you another one. The Los Angeles Times bombing. Now, I think I may have mentioned that on one of my earlier shows to talk about the LA Times bombing. That's coming up. The anniversary is October 1st. All right. 1910. Yeah. 21 dead and 100 plus injured. And see that the LA Times building, as you know, was in downtown Los Angeles. That was actually destroyed by dynamite. Once again, the bomb was placed due to the paper's opposition to unionization in the city. There were two labor organizations involved with that. All right. These individuals turned around and pled guilty and to escape death. I guess they went ahead and pleaded guilty. And they each got only 15 years and life imprisonment. So one guy got 15 years, the other guy got life imprisonment. Bombings, people, 21 dead, 100 or more wounded. Let's keep moving. May 30th, 1915. This was kind of like because of the war. The German agents blew up a barge carrying gunpowder off of Seattle, Washington. That one to me is a little bit different. But remember something, 1915, when did we enter the war? I think actually we entered the war, World War I in 1914. All right, so that one's a little bit different. All right, now, 1915, same year. This other guy named Frank Holt. Now, this was in the District of Columbia, guys. All right. And he didn't like the fact that the American was supporting the Allies in World War One, so he turned around and did some bombings as well. So let's keep moving on from those, because I think that that's a little bit different. Let's move to 1916. And in that one, you had 10 people killed, 40 people injured. And that was what they call Preparedness Day bombing. It killed 10 people, injured 40 in San Francisco. And that, again, was by two radical labor leaders. See, when we think about this thing called terrorism, we always think about it's got to be from somebody overseas. But domestic terrorism, as you've heard me say before, is a heck of a lot different. You can only have domestic terrorism by an American. It happens on American soil, and it's by Americans, technically. That's why they call it domestic terrorism versus international terrorism. So like the individual that shot up the Pulse nightclub in Florida, that was considered international terrorism because they weren't American citizens, even though it happened on American soil. Same thing with the Boston Marathon and Fort Hood. Now, they also had what they call, and you know, this is 1916 also, hundreds of people got killed with this one, and this was in Jersey City, New Jersey. And they call that one the Black Tom explosion, all right? And that was an act of sabotage, okay? So that one, yeah, again, that's around the war. We'll look at that one. Let's look past the war. Now we go to 1990. And they had the United States anarchist bombing. So here we go. Anarchy here, guys. Series of package bombs were mailed to prominent business and government leaders around the country. Now some of those were intercepted, okay? But people were killed by those who actually opened it. Now, the sad part about that, they had people killed, but they never could figure out who did it. So if you remember recently on the news, there was another individual, as a matter of fact, he was from Florida, that was sending bombs around to different politicians as well. He got caught. He just got sentenced not too long ago as well. So that gives you another point to show you that this stuff is not new. Bombs are bombs. Bombs can kill people as well. So we can't just focus on some of this. And then, you know, 1920, we had the Wall Street bombing. Now, who would think about bombing Wall Street, you know, but there's people out there that did it. And that one, they had the horse-drawn wagon that was filled with explosives, and that was detonated in front of the J.P. Morgan Bank on Wall Street. And that killed 38 people and wounded 143. And I mentioned that one on the air before because, to me, that was some of the most devastating ones. I think I did an episode on some of the worst ones, at any rate. And then, of course, they've had race riots. You know, they call one of them the Tulsa race riot. The Bath School disaster that I told you about. The Tulsa race riot, just to refresh your memory, or some of you that didn't hear that particular episode that I did, that was in 1921. And they had between 150 and 300 people killed and 800 plus that were actually injured. All right. And that was one we call the Black Wall Street, you know. So you can look that one up. I don't want to go into the details, but if you look up the Tulsa race riot and Black Wall Street, you'll see some very interesting information on that. 1927, this was a school disaster. So we're always talking about schools, and we talk about the disasters of schools, and we talk about shooters with school. But this one, I've talked about this one briefly on the show before. That was a bombing with the Bath Township, and this was in Michigan. And that was where that 55-year-old school board treasurer, Andrew Keough, that was upset about his property taxes being raised, and then he had been defeated in the campaign for township clerk. He detonated a bunch of dynamite that he placed at the school as revenge. Now, why he would do it to the school, I have no idea. But in that particular one, you had 44 people killed, okay, students, okay, and 58 plus that were actually injured. And then when the responders came, he attacked the responders also with gunfire. So as you can see, some of these things, you have to look at this to say, okay, guys, you're right, Jim. The focus can't just be in any one area because we've got the potential for that to actually expand out with these bombings. Now, Atlanta, Georgia, they've done this with the Hebrew Benevolent Congregation Temple of Atlanta, Georgia. Okay, that was in 1958. I'm going to bring it up to the current situation here by skipping some of the other ones, but New York City has had it. New York City, to me, they've always been a target because you have a large group of people that are moving about. They have the subway system. They have all of that. So that, to me, is why New York keeps getting hit. And, you know, you would think that they would be prepared, but how do you prepare with that many people from that standpoint? And then let me see. There's a couple others I wanted to mention here. You know, 1969, 20 people were killed, you know, when a leftist, Sam Melville, in a bombing of the Marine Midland building in New York City. See, here we go at New York City again. And then we had also another bombing in New York City. Boy, I'm telling you, New York City with these bombs is something else, quite frankly. But that's just the deal. 1970s. You had 5 dead, 69 plus wounded. Again, New York City. Let me look down this list and see if I can find any. See, what we haven't had is in California. A lot of these are in New York. We've had them in Washington, D.C., Maryland, Pittsburgh. Oh, we have one in Los Angeles. Oh, the Alphabet Bomber. Some of you may remember that. You remember that? The Alphabet Bomber that he bombed the Pan Am terminal at Los Angeles International Airport, and he killed people there and injured some as well. He also firebombed the house of a judge and 2 police commissioners, as well as one of the commissioner's cars. So that was interesting as well. But generally, you don't hear about that much out here on the West Coast, which, as I've told you before, that really concerns me because the West Coast bombings, in my opinion, the New York is always a target. We really haven't seen it so much out here, but I really honestly believe that it is coming. And then, of course, we used to have the hijackings also, and the hijackings were bad. 1977, they had Washington, D.C., and it was that they called the Hanafi siege, in which Hanafi Muslim gunmen seized 3 buildings in Washington, D.C., and held hostages for 3 days. See, people don't think about these things, guys. You know, so that's 1977. And I could go on. I could keep going on with these. 1990, 1993, 94, 94. You know, these bombings, truck bombings. 94 was actually Oklahoma City, so that one I'm sure you might remember for some of you anyway. So the message I'm sending out here is that if we want to be on guard, people, we have to be on guard not just from one thing. Our focus needs to be on all of these things. And again, organizations like the FBI, the CIA, et cetera, they are really looking to protect us from all of this behavior. But as citizens, I don't want you to get focused just on one area. It's more than one area. I've shown you that the infrastructure, okay, and what they can do. I've shown you through bombing what they can do. So guns is only one part of it. So when you write to your politicians about all of this, make sure that you're writing and you're bringing up all of these issues and what they may be doing. Because, look, people can buy gunpowder off the Internet. I mean, you know, if you could get gunpowder. So they're talking about regulating the guns or talking about regulating the bullets that you buy, et cetera, and all of that. But what about the gunpowder? I'm sure there's somebody out there that they say, okay, you can only buy so much gunpowder at one time or whatever. But who knows who has access to these things? And as you know, time has shown us, these people will turn around and sell to other people. They'll do all of that. It's like the shooter in El Paso. This guy sold him a gun. He didn't have to go through the background check. Again, I'm not trying to get too heavy into that piece of it because I don't want to wear out my welcome regarding this business about these automatic rifles and the argument surrounding them. Okay, let's go ahead and move on. Targeted violence. First of all, let me just tell you something. Targeted violence and terrorism covers a range of groups and individuals, including domestic terrorists and homegrown violent extremists in this country. And there are part of that on the international front, like with, you know, Al-Qaeda and also ISIS, as an example. And the terminology that you hear when people talk about targeted violence, and that's one of the things that somebody asked me about, so that's why I wanted to talk about it. Targeted violence, just keep in mind, that's when somebody is going after a particular target, all right? Schools, workplaces, large public gatherings, churches, okay, places of faith, that person targeted that, and that's what we're talking about when we say targeted violence. Now, what I do want to talk to you about as well is that this business about targeted violence versus active shooter incidents, because from the emails I got, I think there's a little bit of confusion with that, so I want to kind of straighten that out as well. And I always appreciate people writing. People don't call as much, but people will send me these emails, and that part is fine too. And as I've said in the past, by the way, if you have a particular subject you want to talk about, send it to me, which is what this one was all about, quite frankly, and even some of the emails that I do. But look, when we start talking about targeted violence versus active shooter incidents, let me tell you something. Effective response requires all public safety personnel to have the same strategy and training to most effectively eliminate the threat and to save the most lives. That's what we're talking about here. I was telling a group of people Saturday morning about how all of these agencies are now working together. A lot of the law enforcement agencies on the local level working with the federal authorities as well. So we're learning as we go along. There's no doubt about it. You know, and with every loophole that we try to close on this, another door swings open because these people are smart out there. I mean, it's like the shooter in Las Vegas. You know, people say, oh, we weren't prepared for that. Who would thought of anybody would be shooting from that? Well, see, here we go again. That wasn't new. Texas Tower, guys. All right, the Texas Tower shooting at the University of Texas, I think it was. You know, so again, you look at these things and say, don't forget about them. Keep these things, you know, these plans together for any of these contingencies. See, that's what law enforcement has to do, but you as citizens have to remember. All right, you have to remember these different things. Because as I always say about awareness, you know, awareness is no longer about, you know, security. Awareness is now about survival. So I'm not trying to inundate you with all of these different possibilities. I'm just trying to show you that, A, these times are not new times for us, and we can't forget it, and we can't let our politicians forget it, all right, as well. Now, look, the other thing is, there's an increasing violent threat to emergency responders as well. That, to me, is very, very bad. You know, we got responders that are, you know, like police officers, firemen. They're becoming targets also for some of this. And, you know, they'll try to hurt us that way. See, those are the things that instill fear. Because if you shoot a police officer, they say, you'll shoot anybody. You shoot a fireman, you'll shoot anybody. I mean, what threat does a fireman, okay? And I should say fire person, because I think they have female firefighters also, obviously. So just to let you know, I mean, what threat do these individuals pose? They're just there to put out a fire. I remember there was I think it was a battalion commander or fire chief that was killed a few years ago, you know, when they were responding to a fire. I mean, give me a break. You know, these are just innocent people, just like innocent people in terms of being civilians. Now, they got what they call hybrid targeted violence. We call it HTV, okay? HTV is something that's really kind of like, it's the use of violence targeting a specific population using multiple and multifaceted conventional and unconventional weapons and tactics. That's what you have to keep in mind. They're going to get unconventional. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier about the bombs and about these different things that they use. They're going to be coming up with things that are different. All right? They're going to be coming up with things to be different. Now, I'm going to tell you something. This is just my opinion. China is sending so much drugs over here. These Americans are buying drugs. They're gonna inundate us with drugs. They're gonna get our minds blown. Okay? There's another way to be able to take over this country without firing a bullet. Think about it. You get the population all drugged up, so to speak, okay, with all this opioid epidemic and things of that nature. To me, if you look at that, that is a silent form of terrorism on an international front. Because why would you as a nation, like China as an example, why, and I know what it is, I know it's about the money, okay? But at some point, all money's not good money. I tell my staff that all the time. All money's not good money. As human beings, why would you foster people getting hooked on drugs in any respect? And I know, I get it. I'm not naive. It's all about the money. I get it. But the amount of drugs that they're sending over here,
is really obscene. Now, look, this isn't new. If you've watched TV shows in the past and movies in the past, you've seen where, like in the San Francisco area, where they had those opium dens and things of that nature. That means those drugs have been coming over here for a very long time. And the Coast Guard, the Navy, law enforcement, they're doing the best they can to hold that stuff off. Because, like I said, there's another way to be able to take over your country without firing a bullet. You think about that, all right? We've got to be able to get people off of drugs, all right? The homeless situation, we were talking about that yesterday at a meeting. You know, and some of these people hooked on drugs and arrested us. You know, so you need to think about that. Now, let me just tell you about the components of a hybrid targeted violence. Hybrid targeted violence. Look, it differs from the most common active shooter incidents in that they tend to involve more perpetrators and use of military type tactics and weapons to hit multiple targets. That's what hybrid targeted violence is, to answer the question to the person or a couple of people that sent me an email. And see, that has to do with well-trained, tactically competent, and willing to die perpetrators, guys. Now, you think about some of these active shooters that don't care and they're willing to die. And some of them are going to start using multiple operators at the same time, working in small tactical units, or some people call them cells. You probably have heard that as well. Right now, the only thing that we've seen are individuals. All right? Those are individuals. But this piece of it is a lot different. Now, for people that were in the military, they would be familiar with this because, you know, when they were in Afghanistan or, you know, in the Middle East, when they were fighting, they probably would have seen things like this. But remember, people emulate things. Okay? They duplicate it. They look. They see. All right? Now, they will also do things like luring the first responders in so they can inflict even more damage. So what do? They set a fire. Here comes the firemen, here comes the police. And then bam, that's what happens. So there's different ways that this targeted violence can take place. This concept that I'm telling you about now, once again, is not new. Okay? It's not unheard of. I can tell you that the intelligence community is well aware of these type of things, and that these extremist groups are very interested in initiating, supporting, and inciting this kind of attack on American soil. So I'm trying to show you that there's other things that we need to be thinking about and focusing on as a nation. We can't just focus on one area of attack. It can come from many different areas. There's strategies. See, when we talk about law enforcement, you know, and I know people out there, some people don't like law enforcement, but let me tell you, they've got to figure out all of this. I mean, just think about the different areas that I talked to you today about. And that's not all of them. We have to be open-minded to understand that we are living in different times. We have people that are coming after us. And I'm not talking about on a political front. Let me tell you something. When these people attack, on an international standpoint, we'll say, they're not asking anybody what political persuasion they are. They're not asking any of that. They're not asking for your national origin. They're not asking for your heritage. They're not asking for any of that. They are going to randomly kill anybody and everybody that's in the way. Now, yes, there are situations where we have some of these extremists that targeted maybe some of the Jewish centers like the synagogues and things of that nature. And again, you know, those things are going to happen. It's been happening, unfortunately. And fanatics are just simply hard to stop. So we can't. So those you know, weak-minded people that are doing things like that, obviously it's hard to deal with when it happens. But that's why we got to put our security measures in place, because I'm telling you, people, it's not going to go away. It's going to come in many different forms if we're not careful. Your job as individuals is to keep your eyes and ears open, first of all, for your personal safety. For your personal safety and your family safety, all right? Then as you start to expand out, you can be looking at your community, you can be looking at your work environment and things of that nature. But that's the deal. That's the deal. Now, look, I am not telling you to be paranoid, all right? I am not telling you to be paranoid, all right? But the reality is, we've got to be ready. Because I'm going to tell you something. The FBI and other federal and state local law enforcement agencies, they have significantly increased their awareness. They've increased their due diligence, and they've been successful in the disruption of many terrorist cells in the United States. Some of that you've never even heard about. But they've done it. All right? They are working to keep us safe. But they still need your help. All right? They still need your help. All right? Now, I can even tell you that some of the emergency medical systems, law enforcement, the fire departments, they've drastically changed their approach to an active shooter incident. Local police are now realizing they can no longer wait for SWAT, as an example, you know, for the SWAT team to mobilize. All right? Why? Because they're changing their tactics, guys. All right? So police are looking to engage, distract, and hopefully neutralize the threat. Before, you know, we call SWAT in. Yeah, wait for SWAT. We can't afford to wait for SWAT now. I'm not saying that they take long to respond, but some of these active shooter situations, guys, are over in 4 and 5 minutes. All right? So it doesn't work that way. So look, I hope I accomplished my purpose today. My purpose was to show you that, A, none of this is new. It can come from any different directions, including our infrastructure, all right? It can come from different methods, different strategies. The ideologies are all the same out there, kill Americans, okay? So that's out there. That's not going to change. That's what it is, all right? Now, next week, I'm going to be talking to you about violence against women, all right? And that's because I'm talking about targeted violence. Part two to this is going to be violence against women, which is gender-based violence. I'm going to be talking about that because that is another critical area. All right? So we'll be doing that next week. All right. You've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join me next week. And if you like what you heard, do me a favor and spread the word. Now, something else is a friendly reminder. My book is doing very well. I think we sold about, 600 or 700 books this week alone. So the book is Domestic Terrorism, Safety Tips, Your Pocket Guide. You can get it on lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. All right, so keep up the good work, listeners. Keep buying those books because the information in there is very good. Now, until next week, be aware, be vigilant, be safe, but more importantly, be a reluctant victim. Until next week, people.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.